Okay, here we go. Hour number three on this Monday. Hope you had a good weekend. Forgot to say that earlier. Mitchell Henderson is back with us tonight. Much of the world, of course, is under tremendous stress and chaos. It's getting worse, this tariff thing. Believe me, it was part of the Great Reset. You got to tear it all down before you can rebuild it in the image you want. And that's what they're doing. Wait until you see. If Musk indeed has broken with Trump and believes in a tariff-free, free trading society, he may be leaving the White House soon. That's an irreconcilable difference. That's a big story. We'll see if it's true. Maybe another just canard that's been tossed out there to keep people talking. Hello, Mitchell.
Hello. I think you could be correct about that, Jeff, because if you stop and think about it, Trump is of two minds. He wants a fair deal for American businesses, trade, yeah. But at the same time, he wants to collect a lot of money from tariffs. You see, for the rest of the world collects $375 billion from the United States in tariffs. And as of last month, the United States only collected about $50 billion a year from the rest of the world.
That's
so
true.
So he
Trump
was
correct
collect-
about that. He's been saying we're getting ripped off, and that is correct.
Yes. But what is sort of monkey wrench in it is there's 193 countries in the world. So far, 70 countries have come back to him and said, well, look, we'll drop all tariffs on American goods, all of them. There'll be no tariffs on American goods if you reciprocate, okay? So that's
free trade.
Good for the American business. Yeah. Yeah, that's actual free trade, okay?
Yeah.
And even Europe, the European Union, said the other day, well, we'll drop all tariffs on industrial goods. Okay, they're not talking about beer and wine and cheese and stuff, but they're talking about on industrial goods. They're willing to drop all tariffs. So what has happened is his trade war has already been super successful. Okay, I don't think he was expecting that success. I think he was
70 some countries have collapsed. Interesting.
Great.
Very interesting.
Right. Right.
Well,
so,
in a way, and I'm not blowing my trumpet for Trump, but if he pulls this off, he's got a lot to crow about.
Yeah, he does. So you know, everybody just needs to realize it's like Bismarck said, it's like everybody likes sausage, but you don't want to know how it's made. Okay, and that's what we have here is they're attacking Trump viciously at every front, and and over what? He's only been there for 2 months. I mean, it's like there's not been time for anything to work or not work. Okay, so they're just stirring up hatred. If you look at the people who are these news anchors, these journalists and stuff, these are not educated, informed people.
No.
Okay, these celebrity talking heads, basically.
That's all it is.
Okay.
Showbiz.
I mean, a lot of these people, they have their jobs because they're nice looking. Okay. That does not mean that they're intelligent.
Telegenics.
Okay?
Telegenicity, it's everything.
Right.
Appearance, believe it.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. So these people are very ignorant people that give you the news. And, you know, it's sort of like, we're listening to ignorant people talk about what's going on, is what we're doing.
Read us a script to brainwash us and make us think the information
that they're giving us is just to create hatred and discontent. This is part of the Great Reset, too. This is the next civil war. They're trying to split America into two camps, okay? And we can already see, whereas the right would never go out and do violence against the left, we see that the left has no problem doing violence against the right. Okay, so we're already
communist.
At a disadvantage in that, and that's the way that it's always been. So I want to be the bearer of more bad news. Okay, and this has to do with the next war that we're getting into. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So on March 30th, 2025, the New York Times published an article on the secret history of America's involvement in the Ukrainian war. So basically what this article says is actually, aside from the troops on the front line, all the plans, all the commands, everything is American military officers. We have run that war, okay? So Americans, be alarmed. These American officers have no problem of sending millions of boys and girls to their deaths. Millions. Okay, this is how they're going to fight a war with your children, America. They're going to fight a war by sending your sons and daughters to a senseless death. Because these people are not leaders. There's no leadership. You know, Hegseth came in and he's fired, you know, what, a handful of generals. That is not enough. He needs to fire all the generals, most of the senior officers, and probably most of the junior officers need to be fired.
Hegseth is a player. He's not going to do that. Should have been Mike Flynn. Mike Flynn would have cleaned the whole pentagram out. Mike Flynn did not
So the United States has been responsible for the strategy, the tactics, the operational art in Ukraine. Yep. We have failed miserably. Miserably, we have failed. Okay, right. Ukraine is not Ukrainians' failure. That is America's failure. We failed there just like we failed in Afghanistan, just like we failed in Iraq, just like we fail everywhere. This is our failure. So I want you to think about this. The Kavoli plan, that was the plan for Ukraine to attack in Kursk. This is a brilliant strategy of General Kavoli, who's still our commander in Europe, who needs desperately to be fired. He's a very incompetent general, and he needs to be taken out, okay? So this Kavoli plan has cost over 67,000 lives, and that is a very conservative estimate. And what did he gain? What he did is he took the best Ukrainian units, he put them up to invade Kursk, okay? And what that did is it allowed Russia to go on the offensive all across the front, okay? It helped beat down the Ukraine's forces. Why didn't Russia just go in and take the Ukrainians out of Kursk right away? Well, why take away such a wonderful gift? Because Ukraine kept pouring its best men, its best equipment into Kursk. This was a giveaway to Russia. This Kavoli is an idiot. Okay, he's so unbelievably incompetent. He's the top general in NATO right now. Mm-hmm. If we actually went to war with Russia, we're going to lose. We're going to lose very bad, even if it's not a nuclear. If it's a standard non-nuclear war, a conventional war, we will lose against Russia. We will lose. We're already losing against Russia. That's us fighting in Ukraine now, and we are losing, okay?
Yeah.
So, and if you stop and think about it, Kavoli is publicly against Trump's peace plan. He came out and said he's encouraging the European nations to fight on, to move troops into Ukraine. He wants a nuclear war. He wants a war with between NATO and Russia. So do the European powers. They are so war-hungry, it's not funny.
Why? All right, why? What? Nobody wins a war. Why? What the hell's wrong with their minds?
Well,
what are they thinking?
Because if they can make... Listen, right now in Europe, like Germany, France... they're teaching the kids to get ready for war. They're telling the people, get your bug-out bags ready. Get
72
your survival
hours
food ready.
Of survival.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
They're telling
them, get ready for war. Sweden, Finland, Norway, Denmark, all these
countries.
They're in a war frenzy. They're getting ready for war, okay? Well, what it is, see, there was a wonderful gift that Europe got in 1945, that was NATO. The United States has always paid for the defense of Europe, and Europe was able to develop rapidly into a first world country and a great economy because we paid for all their defenses. Now Trump has come in and he's not going to pay for all their defenses, and the NATO countries, European countries, are terrified that they might have to pay for their own defense, because that's going to hurt their economy. That's going to hurt their vote at the voting poll. So they have to insist that Russia is a threat that Russia is not. The threat is NATO threatening Russia. Russia is not threatening any NATO country. None of them.
It's okay. Amusing to me because NATO has literally bled most Western European countries nearly dry of their military stockpiles, shall we say. It's all gone to Ukraine.
Yeah.
It's all been blown up.
Yes,
so what
has.
Are they going to fight with?
It has.
Well, I don't get it.
Yeah, like Denmark has no artillery. Denmark gave all their artillery to Ukraine. Jeff, you cannot fight without artillery.
No.
Okay.
No.
You
it's
have
nuts.
To have artillery.
Right.
You just have to. Okay. So and anyways, like the German army, the Canadian army, the British army, those armies are hollowed out. They're not good for anything. Okay. They can't fight anything at all. Okay. The only thing they've been in, they've taken forces in our wars in the Middle East and stuff. For example, Germany, they sent troops to Afghanistan, but they would only send troops to areas that were not heavily under attack by the Taliban. Like they went into the north where the anti-Taliban people lived, like Mazar Sharif and in northern Afghanistan, where they would not have to fight because they don't want their soldiers to get hurt. Okay. And the same with, you know, everybody else, basically. They didn't want their soldiers to get hurt when they went to war. They were token forces, like a company or a battalion at most, something like that. Okay. These are not combat trained troops. Okay. So let me give you another example of the problem with the American military and a problem with Pete Hegseth right now. So you'll notice that four soldiers were killed in a peat bog in Lithuania.
Yeah, what the hell was that about? What was that about?
Well, let me tell you the true story of this.
Yeah, please.
It's
That's
simple.
A weird one.
When right. you are an American unit and you are going to a foreign land, okay, it is the duty of the commanders to know the terrain they're operating in. So they would get that information basically from the Lithuanian army. The Lithuanian army has armored vehicles. They've been doing maneuvers out in the bush for years, and they know better than to drive onto a peat bog. It looks like nobody told the American soldiers that. They took an M-88 recovery vehicle and drove it into a peat bog, and they all drowned. What the hell? Okay, so I'll tell you what needs to happen. Is their platoon leader, their company commander, their battalion commander, their brigade commander, the division commander, and General Cavoli need to be fired for that, okay? There's a lot of people that argue this with me and say, well, no, okay, why should they be fired? They didn't have anything to do with it. They had everything to do with it. The responsibility for the soldiers belongs to the commander. For example, when I had a cavalry platoon, 40 men, for 2 years I had this platoon, and if one of my guys failed to pass the PT test or failed to qualify at the firing range, that, Jeff, is my fault. That's not their fault. It's never their fault. It's always my fault as the platoon leader that they did not pass. If my men go out into town and get busted for a bar fight or DWI, that's my fault. It's not my men's fault, okay? What a good leader does is he takes responsibility and accountability for all of that. In 2 years, not a single one of my men failed the PT test, failed to qualify at the rifle range. Not a single man got busted for DWI. They maybe got busted, but the commander never found out about it, okay? I protected them, okay? So nobody had an official punishment for DWI or a bar fight or anything, okay? Because I took care of my men. That was my job. If I did that same thing today, that I did back then, I would go to Fort Leavenworth. And what that was is when I was officer of the day, and the MPs brought reports in to me for a bar fight or a DWI. These are misdemeanor crimes, and they're handled at the company level. So the MPs bring you the report, and then the company decides what to do, usually in Article 15 or something.
Right.
Well, the MPs would bring the paperwork in. I would say, well, Sergeant so-and-so, this is probably the end of your career, you know. Shame on you. And then the MPs would walk out, and I would put it in the shredder. And the soldier would say, well, what's next? And I'd say, well, what's next with what? You know, it was over. Monday morning, when I talked to the commanding officer, he said, how many Article 15s we got? And I said, not a one. And he said, he knew what I did. And he said, I love it when you're the officer of the day, because I took the initiative to make sure that everything was okay. I would go to prison for doing that. This happened in 1986. I would go to prison today for doing that, because there is no leadership in the military. There is none.
And officers
and NCOs do not take care of their soldiers anymore.
No.
They will throw them to their death senselessly, but they're not going to take care of them. Okay?
Your men respected you probably more than you know today, even. I have a hunch.
Well, yeah, I took care of them. If you take care of your men in all the times leading up to the day of battle, on the day of battle, they will take care of you. They will take care of business. Okay. I mean, that's called leadership. We don't have any of that anymore. There is none in the military. Forget about it. Okay, there's a few guys. I mean, my sons and their their service from 1999 to 2019, which is 20 years of service, they could name for me about three officers or NCOs that were good, that were actual leaders. Only three in 20 years? That's pathetic. So they are there, and the ones who are not leaders, Pete Hegseth leads the firm. Now, Pete Hegseth, he does know what leadership is. He's led men in combat. He knows what it is. He needs to start buckling down and get rid of all the fat, all the people who are not leaders. And it's your sons and daughters that's lives are in the balance. He needs to quit fooling around and fire these people. He needs to fire Cavoli immediately. These are bad generals. These are not leaders. They will send people senselessly to their deaths.
We have too many generals now here, as you've made quite clear before. Why aren't we cleaning house on some of the generals? We've got too many useless generals.
Oh, way too many. They're just afraid to fire them. They've had, ever since Clinton became president, we've had a wuss culture in our military. The Clinton administration was the end of leadership in the military.
Well, Hegseth is not the answer. I've not seen anything he's done yet.
Well, I'm sorry, but it's really sad to say, but there really isn't anybody who would do a better job than he's done. That's
given.
Sad.
Okay, so what we have to consider then is how bad the military is now.
It's terrible.
He can only do as much as he's doing. You're going to give him a pass on this. Okay, that's fine. I didn't know. So you think he's doing all right?
No, I'm not giving him a pass. What I'm saying is, if anybody else, if any other man had been appointed Secretary of Defense, we would have the same old crap. At least Hegseth has put an end to a lot of stuff, but he seriously needs to fire a lot more people.
Okay, it's that bad.
Yes, it's that bad.
Man, is firing the answer, or is retraining?
Yes.
The existing
no,
people.
Fire them.
Just get rid of them. They're not worth keeping.
You have to identify your few leaders. And that's easy to do. The people that most of the other senior NCOs and most of the other officers hate, those are probably the leaders, because they hate leaders.
Oh.
Leaders make them look bad, okay? I mean, they do make you look bad. I'll just give you an example. So I treated my platoon the way that I did. I let them know that I had their back. You know, they could see this in many, many different ways, okay? So one time we had to, at Fort Stewart, we had to do this thing called an RTEP, and what it is it's like a test where you do like a route reconnaissance. Okay, this was a route reconnaissance that they set up, and then they grade you on how you do on it. So the first day, it took the first platoon 20 hours to complete it. It was gruelingly miserable, okay? So the next day, they had a better lieutenant, and it took him 16 hours to complete the route reconnaissance, okay? So the night before it was my turn, I got my men together and said, listen, I'm going to have to reassign everybody to a different tank and reassign all the crews because this is pathetic. 16, 20 hours, this is pathetic. You don't just come upon an obstacle and decide what you're going to do, plan and decide it then. This is battle drill. You do the same thing all the time. You set out scouts and observation. You clear the obstacle. You move forward, right? And it's the same thing. It's just automatic. You know, we don't have to stop and plan and talk about it, mill around mill. We can just do what we're supposed to do. Well, so the sergeants came back to me and said, well, sir, can we just leave all the crews like we are? And we promise you that we will do good. I said, okay, but I'm going to wake up in the morning. I'm going to ask the lowest private what we're supposed to do if we hit an obstacle. And if he can't tell me the correct thing to do, then it's I'm reassigning everybody. Okay, so this was the threat that I put on them, to reassign everybody. Okay, so they didn't want that to happen. That motivated them to make sure that every private knew what to do.
I got it.
Okay,
yeah.
You know how long it took us to do the route reconnaissance?
I'm waiting for this.
An hour and a half.
Oh.
An hour and a half.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh, my.
So
wow.
This is what leadership gets you. That is the difference between leadership and not leadership. Okay.
Uh-huh. That's
so
terrific.
And this is very well cultivated. It's like my first days there, like there was a sergeant that had just gotten promoted that was really, he wasn't good. So I was giving him a ration of shit. And I didn't do this in front of his men. I did this in front of some senior sergeants and stuff because they had something to do with getting him promoted. It was a nepotism buddy thing. They got him promoted.
Got it.
I said, "No, you're going to have to do your job, you know. And if you don't, I'm gonna bust you back to spec four as fast as I can, okay? Because I think you're not a good leader, and you're not competent. You're not tactically or technically proficient to do this and stuff." And as I was talking to him, I went ahead and I dismissed him. And just then, the company commander, the captain, came up. He says, "So what's going on? Is there a problem with that trooper?" I says, the sergeant? No, he's a stand-up, strat guy. He's going to be an asset to the team. He's a good guy. And I'm saying this to the captain in front of these other senior sergeants, okay? So now when the captain goes away, what's the lesson that the senior sergeants take from that? That everything stops with me. I do not go talking to the commander about the bad things my men did. It all is me. It's my responsibility, and the buck stops with me.
That's five-star psychology at work. You had it figured out.
And it's also, that is what leadership is.
Yes. Yeah.
But there's other things that I did to do this, too. I did not sleep in the officer's barracks. I slept in the barracks with my men. Especially in the field, I was right there with them the whole time. Whatever they went through, I went through. So, you know, it's like, these are the things you gotta bend over backwards, you know? I mean, even Napoleon said he would kiss his men's butts to get them to go out there and do what they needed to do, you know? So this is what leadership is. You have to take care of your troops. That's just all there is to it. We don't have that. When my sons needed something, they said, "Yeah, go online and deal with it." That's their answer. And I would never say that to one of my men. I would, if they came to me with help, I would get in there on the computer with them and help them out. I would not be telling them to just go deal with it. That's not leadership. That is what we have. When they say an army of one, yes, it's an army of one because you're on your own. Nobody's watching after you. Nobody's taking care of you. Okay, so. So I have a lot of criticism, this is why we don't win wars. We don't win wars.
Understood.
You know?
Now, if this, if now was then, and you had 40 men, you'd have 30 men and maybe 10 women. What you'd inherit.
Yes, I'd have 10 women. Yeah.
And then what would you do?
And 20 of the men would be gay. Okay. That's what it would be now. Okay. And a few of them would be women men, you know.
Yeah.
Channies, whatever. So that's our military.
I don't know how you could even work with that. I just have no idea.
Well, I saw a lot of people. This was several years ago, but I talked to a Marine major, and the reason I got in a conversation with him is because he was the equivalent of cavalry and armored cavalry in the Marines. He was a armored reconnaissance Marine. Okay, so he actually went to armored cavalry school that I went to, but as a Marine. Okay, so we got to talking and stuff, and so I asked him. I pressed him. He had gone to Iraq to fight in 2006, 2007, and I asked him, I said, well, you know, is the Marines so insufferably incompetent like the Army and the Air Force and Navy is now? And I could tell he didn't want to do it because a Marine never wants to talk bad about the Marines, okay? But he says, well, you know, this is officer to officer. And he said, yeah, he said, there's no leadership in the Marines. He says, the leadership is dying in the Marine Corps. This was in 2007. Imagine where it's at now.
I can't. We're
so this indicates
shape.
That our military clearly cannot win a war, and that's because there is no leadership. Okay?
You know what? I think they're gaining, not gaining. I think they're using as an excuse that leadership will come from AI in the future. That's where they think it's going to come from. People are secondary. That's what I think.
Listen, it's not about thinking; it's about leading. You got to lead.
Yeah, I get it.
It's good to know tactics and strategies, but leading is a very personalized thing. Okay, so you know, what we see going on is Zelensky absolutely does not want a peace. He does not want to make any kind of a deal.
No.
It's 3 weeks now. They've had this: do not fire upon each other's petroleum infrastructure.
Energy sector.
Or energy sector.
No energy sector.
And he's doing it. And the
constantly. He never stopped.
Attacking the Russians. They never stopped. Never did.
Nope.
Because, see, he thinks he's like Israel. He can have him. He can break all the rules because he demands to have the same impunity that Israel has.
Why isn't Putin putting a stop to this?
Well, this is what's coming down the pike, because now it's because of what's going on in Iran. Trump really, really wants to make a deal with Putin. So now Trump is basically said, I'm going to make the deal with Putin, and Zelensky will sign on to it, or I will cut off all military aid and all intelligence sharing to Ukraine. I will be completely out of there.
Well, you see, that goes back to my earlier position on this, that Russians aren't stupid. They have to know that Trump has the ability to stop the whole thing right now by doing exactly what you just said. They are fighting Trump, not Zelensky. They're fighting the guy behind Zelensky who keeps putting the materiel on the line.
Right.
And as long as that happens, it's not Zelensky.
Even Victoria Spars, which is the only Ukrainian American member of Congress, I think she's from Indiana or someplace. She even said, "Look, Ukraine's losing. They can't demand anything. They need to just give up their territory and do what is necessary for peace." And this is the only Ukrainian member of Congress saying this. Okay,
no, she's right.
Yeah, she is right.
They don't have a leg to stand on. Nothing.
No. They don't have any cards. So why does Trump want to do this? They want to do this because Trump works for Netanyahu, and Netanyahu wants a war with Iran. So Trump is thinking if he can get Russia to accept him attacking Iran, okay, then what he can offer Russia in exchange is, look, you'll be free of the Ukraine problem, and Ukraine will not be in NATO. There'll be no NATO troops there. You'll have peace with Ukraine. So your southern flank is secured, okay? So let us go be heavy-handed and attack Iran viciously, okay? So Iran is taking this seriously, okay? What they did is they're preparing for total war. Iran has warned all the Arab nations that if they allow Americans or Israeli overflight to attack Iran, Iran will punitively attack them. Also, if the Arab nations allow the U.S. to stage or base their attacks from U.S. bases on their territory, Iran will attack them and be at war with them. Iran has made this very clear. They've made this clear before, but they're reiterating that now. Okay, so, but we moved a bunch of strategic bombers to Diego Garcia in the Chagos Islands in the Indian Ocean.
And they're just sitting there day after day. Yeah. They've been there for about 10-12 days now, something like that.
Yeah, they're on standby to do that. So Trump is hoping that if he gives Russia a win in Ukraine, they will allow the U.S. To destroy Iran. Okay. So this is, and you know what, people, this is not going to be as easy as people think. Iran has I think it's the second largest army in the Middle East after Turkey. Okay. And Turkey outside the United States has the largest army in NATO. Okay. So there's another thing that I think I need to call people's attention to. I've said this before. I've said that anti-Semitism will become a crime that you can be punished for. This is coming. Okay, we can kind of tell, because like if you have an F-1 visa or you have a green card, they're kicking you out of the country. They're revoking your visa if you are anti-Semitic. Okay. And remember, anti-Semitic just means that you're anti-Israel. Okay, so I don't know if how many people saw this, but you know, Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens are honestly and convincingly against war on Israel's behalf. And they're both against the genocide in the Gaza. They're both against it, and they're both honestly against it. These two people are canaries in the coal mine. So I saw this talk. There's this guy named David Friedman, who in the first Trump administration was Trump's ambassador to Israel. So he was the ambassador to Israel from 2017 to 2021 under the first Trump administration. He was Trump's bankruptcy lawyer, as a matter of fact. And he helped Trump in his 2016 campaign. Okay, so this is what he said. That Owens Tucker, he says outright that they are anti-Semites. And this is what I'm quoting what he said. We are not going to win their hearts and minds because they don't have a heart or a mind. There is no reason to believe we are going to ever convince them, but we can put them in jail. We can make their lives miserable, and we can cut their funding. Okay.
Wow.
So you understand that the visa holders are the low-hanging fruit. That those are the people they can go after right this minute without additional legislation. Okay, but David Friedman has the ear of President Trump. He's a personal friend of President Trump. He's saying that Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson need to go to jail. Okay, so when you see them go to jail, that's the canary in the coal mine. Okay, you know bad things are going to happen. So how can they do this? How can they make anti-Semitism against the law? Well, they can do it if they go to war with Iran. That's why Israel wants us to go to war with Iran. If we're at war with Iran, then you watch. They will make anti-Semitism a crime. And just think about this, people.
You can be anti-Irish, anti-Indian, anti-Somalian, all you want.
You can be anti-American.
That's under the, that's
you
guaranteed anti-American.
You can be against Christianity, and that's perfectly legal. Even
it's
you
all
can
a guarantee.
Burn an American flag. And
First
that's
Amendment.
All freedom of speech. But
that's
it is not freedom of speech to burn an Israeli flag. That is hate speech.
Unreal.
It is not freedom of speech to criticize Judaism or to criticize Israel. Okay. But I want you to pay attention, okay? I want people to pay attention here. Don't be fooled by this, because most of those people who are protesting what's going on in the Gaza, those are Jewish people. That you see them, they have a shirt on saying, not in our name. They are very, very anti-genocide. We in the news, they call them pro-Palestinian protesters.
Correct.
They are not pro-Palestinian. They are anti-genocide, anti-war crime.
So how's that going to get mixed up in court here?
Well, Zionism has always, always wanted people to hate Jews in order to
It gives them carte blanche. It gives them a huge advantage.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes,
sure.
Yes. They've got the Holocaust industry, the persecution of Jews industry. And keep in mind that a Zionist is not a Jew, okay? They may be Jewish, but generally they're atheistic and they're Marxist, okay?
That's
Theodore Herzl,
exactly right.
The founder of Zionism, was an atheist. He couldn't stand God or religion, okay? He's a political animal that wanted political Zionism, is what they referred to it as. Okay, so people who are against Zionism are actually against a form of atheistic Marxism, is what they're against. It's a Jewish nationalism, a Jewish Marxist nationalism that they're opposed to. But what they have done is they have said criticism of Zionism is criticism of Jews. No, it is not. That is completely untrue. Okay? There's nothing anti-Semitic about being anti-Israel, okay? Nothing anti-Semitic about being... Just think of the absurdity of this, is that these people are opposed to Zionism because they're committing war crimes on what kind of people? Semitic people. Arabs are Semitic people.
It's all true.
They're committing war crimes on Semitic people. But if you want to back up these Semitic people that they are committing war crimes on, if you're going to speak in their favor, you're anti-Semitic. I mean, this is a classical. It's just like saying a man can be a woman. It's the same mind trick. They've changed the definition. It's like calling Marxism critical theory. It's putting a different label on something and changing the whole meaning of that label. Okay, so this is the trick that they're doing, and. The thing is, you can see that we've moved ahead because the new ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee, is a Christian.
Was he confirmed? Was he confirmed yet?
Yes. Yeah, I think he was. Yeah,
I think he's still pending.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Is he? I'm not sure.
He's a Christian Zionist maniac. He'll be perfect for.
Yeah,
for
they will approve him. I'm pretty sure. You know, so the thing is Christian Zionism is critical to Israel. Israel cannot exist without the United States. The world cannot have peace with Israel. And the only thing keeping Israel alive and peace dead is the United States of America. Israel is nothing without the United States. They would collapse overnight without our implicit support. Okay, and that is why Christian Zionism is so critical. Christian Zionism is critical to the existence of Israel. I don't think I can simplify it better or make it clearer, but the fact is, if we want to talk about this, the definition of Antichrist in 1 John 2:22-23 is anyone who denies that Jesus is the Christ. People, the Jews, deny Jesus as the Christ. They are Antichrist.
The
Muslims deny Jesus as the Christ. They are Antichrist. This is Antichrist versus Antichrist going on in the Middle East. why are Christians involved? Okay, another thing, the second half of that thing says, whoever does not have the Son does not have the Father. People, it is a lie. This is from the New Testament, from 1 John. It is a lie to say that God is on Israel's side. The Bible says that God is not on Israel's side because they do not have the Son, so they do not have the Father. That the Palestinians don't have the Son, so they don't have the Father either. The Iranians don't have the Son, so they don't have the Father either. God is not on any of these people's side, people.
Got it.
None of these people's side. But yet, our country is going to go to war on Israel's behalf, get mixed up in this Antichrist war. Okay, we're going to do that, and we're going to lose millions of Americans and destroy our country in a nuclear war over a country that really should mean nothing at all to us. They don't do anything for us. They never have done anything for us. Nothing.
I never
when
will
has Israel sent troops to help us out in the fight?
No, never. No.
When have they sent us aid when we've had a disaster? Never.
It's all a blatant, disgusting situation. It's outrageous. And apparently Huckabee was confirmed by committee on 5 days ago. I think it went to a floor vote right away. Anyway, I'm looking, but nothing.
Well, I never doubted that he would be approved. I mean, that's a pretty low level.
I'm not sure.
Usually they kind of get a rubber stamp on things, you know.
Yes. Yeah. I'm looking here still. I can't. Nomination, Huckabee, author, public speaker, approved for Israeli ambassador job 5 days ago. President Trump's nominee for U.S. ambassador to Israel was approved by Senate committee on Wednesday. So the committee, at least, is supposed to go to a full floor vote, which I think it did already. Anyhow. There you go.
I have no doubt that they'll approve
him. No, he's perfect for the sources that they want to serve. Perfect.
Yes, he is. So, I won't get into it, but this is all, Christian Zionism is a thing called dispensationalism, and people should go look that up and see what that is, because it's not a Christian doctrine. I think there's even a video out there saying that dispensationalism is not a Christian theology. Okay, so it is. It just isn't. It's completely contrived. Okay, it started in like 1936 with a guy named Darby, some preacher. You know, I mean, and what are preachers? You know, let's look at some preachers. Joel Osteen, Kenneth Copeland, Beth Myers.
Sorry.
I mean, these people, are they really any kind of a moral or a theological authority?
No, and if you've been able to listen to...
Or are they scammers and con men? You know?
They all, by their own voices, with reverse speech, have proven themselves to be exactly what you just said. Hustlers, scam artists, and con artists. That's what they are. And David Oates did that. And he was a pastor earlier on, very sincere in his Christianity, and he was shocked every single one of them that he ran his reverse speech protocols on turned out to have been a fraud. Every one of them. These are big names. Billy Graham, I don't care who it is. Awful.
Yes. They're just, let me tell you, it is so totally convoluted what they have people believing, okay? And it's like, for a good example, the late great Planet Earth, that story Hal Lindsey, that is dispensationalism, okay? So basically, let me tell you what dispensationalism. If you just look at Revelations, it goes like this. So it starts with Christ, then 2,000 years later, and they just think it's 2,000 years between Abraham and Moses, 2,000 years between Moses and Christ, 2,000 years between Christ and Christ coming back. Prior to Christ coming back is the tribulation. and then the second coming. After the second coming is the millennium where Christ rules the earth. Okay, after 1,000 years is the last and final judgment. Okay, and that's just kind of verbatim from Revelations. What does dispensationalism believe? Well, this is what they believe. First, there's Christ, and then you don't have to wait 2,000 years, but there'll be a second coming of Christ, and this is where there's the rapture. And then after the rapture, then there's tribulation in the world, and then Christ comes another time. So a second coming, and that is where the millennium is brought in and stuff, and then 1,000 years later, there's the last judgment. So they have it kind of twisted up, saying that Christ is going to come and meet us in the sky for the rapture, and then there'll be a tribulation of 7 years, and then Christ comes back again with his church. He comes back and establishes the millennium. Okay, this is not at all what Scripture says. Scripture says nothing like this. This is a man-made theology. It's not biblical. It's not in the Bible. You know, I mean, I've had discussions with these people for years. You know, like, where do you see this said in the Bible? And they show me where it says this, but the only problem is it never says that. It never says that. But it does say the first thing that I told you, that's the normal thing that it talks about in the Bible. There's Christ, the second coming, the millennium, blah, 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 okay? Before Christ comes in the second coming, we have 7 years of tribulation. And what's tribulation? Tribulation is what you're feeling right now. It's this unsettled feeling that they're causing on you with their dissonance in the news, in the everything they do, in the media, in entertainment. It's just this dissonance meant to create anxiety in you, telling you, well, the world's going to burn up in heat because you're using gasoline. There's going to be a virus that wipes out all humanity. They're using fear to manipulate people. And these things are all bullshit. Okay.
110%. It's misdirection. It's show business. It's entertainment, and it's not entertainment at its highest level. It's sickening, all of it. It's hard to take any of it seriously. At all, it is.
I mean, can you take newscasters seriously?
No, it's the same. You're talking about the same general.
Idiots.
That's right.
Yeah.
No, I honestly, I can't, and I don't. Just can't. It's awful. It's a shame. It's embarrassing. It's disgusting. It's amazing how they get away with it. Time and time again.
You know, Jeff, there's a reason why we see reports every day of some brutal rape and murder, and then we see that guy get out on, let out, not even on bond, but just released awaiting trial. Then we see him get like 5 or 10 years in prison. Okay.
Maybe.
That's done for a reason. It's done to let you know that there is no justice. Okay. To let you know you better be afraid because the government is on the side of the bad guys. It is not on the side of the good people. You know? I mean,
no chance.
Yeah, they would like nothing better than for somebody to break into your house, you kill them in self-defense, and they send you to prison for life, for murder.
And the
criminal's family actually can sue you. I mean, this is all meant to make you upset. And it does make you upset. It makes me upset.
Did you see the story about the high school athlete in Texas? The white kid?
Yeah.
The black kid stabbed him in the heart, killed him. The black kid's family has started a GoFundMe page, and they've already received $140,000 with a lot of notes saying that our boy was a victim of racism and bullying.
Yep.
He didn't commit murder at all. That's how
it's
insane
like
it's gotten.
MS-13 guy they sent to El Salvador. He's El Salvadoran. They sent him to El Salvador. And a federal judge is telling El Salvador, hey, you got to give him back. as if a country is going to get its own citizen back to the United States because some federal judge says to. It's absurd. Not only to that, but to see the Democratic Party and the yeah. leftist media go googly-eyed over, we have to stand up for this vicious, worthless piece of shit criminal. You know, I mean, where is their head at? They're doing it on purpose to upset the normal person.
It's true, 100% true. Thank you, Mitchell. Excellent hour as always. We learned a lot. Talk to you soon. Keep up the good work. We'll talk next week for sure.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, good night.
Good night, everybody.
Mitchell Henderson. You always learn from these wonderful guests we have. Back with you tomorrow night on Tuesday. Take care. Thank you for being here. And don't forget, we are facing potential calamities here. So prepare or beware and then some. Talk to you tomorrow.